Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. Let me tell you guys that starting Thursday, we will no longer be 610 Sports Radio. We are morphing into 96.5 The Fan. Now, let me tell you, however you are currently listening to the show, you can still listen to the show that way on Thursday. If you love listening to the podcast, keep listening to the podcast. If you love listening live on the app, keep listening on the app. If you don't want to come over to the FM side with us, the show will be simulcast right here on 610 AM. But I am going to the FM side. I'm taking Rob with me. I'm not going to leave Rob back. Rob's coming with me to the FM side. That's where we will be. But you don't have to come over there. I would encourage you to do so. I really want you to come over there. But if you want to stay right here on 610 AM, you are more than welcome to. I just wanted to pass that message to you guys. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Dan Hayes. He covers the Minnesota Twins for The Athletic. Dan, happy to have you join us on the show today. Let's talk about this from a big picture standpoint. These two teams look very, very similar on paper. I mean, they are almost a mirror image of one another. Why do you think Minnesota finds themselves 6-2 so far this season over the Royals?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question because they are similarly built in that they both like to play defense. It's funny, unless the Royals are facing Bailey Ober, it doesn't seem like they've figured out how to get over that hump yet. Now, Bobby Witt is amazing, and he has performed really well against the Twins. It felt like he really kind of gained his ground and sort of elevated becoming this superstar last year in that series in Kansas City in July where he hit the walk-off grand slam against Duran. And the teams always play close baseball games, but it just seems like the Twins have found an edge. And it doesn't seem to matter who they have on the field because we saw it early in the season. You know, the Twins are 6-2 against the Royals this year now. And, you know, Royce Lewis gets hurt in that first game in the season opener and didn't play against them until Monday. And yet, you know, Byron Buxton misses some of those games. Carlos Correa's missed some of those games. Twins still figure out ways to win. And, you know, it's weird. It's just sometimes how teams match up. The Twins can't seem to figure out Cleveland. Cleveland's 7-2 against the Twins. Cleveland can't seem to figure out the White Sox, which is the craziest part. The White Sox have 5 of their 28 victories or whatever it is against Cleveland this year in 10 meetings. So I just sometimes think it's how you match up. It's so random because these are all three, Cleveland, Kansas City, and the Twins, good teams, and they just seem to have each other's numbers in different ways.
Dan, 100%, and it's funny because if you look at the numbers, I mean, Minnesota is 6-2 against Kansas City, yet they have scored the same amount of runs. Kansas City has scored 35. Minnesota has scored 35. Similar questions have been asked about both teams. Both Kansas City and Minnesota were extremely good against the Chicago White Sox and have just kind of tread water against everybody else. You would think that all of these games would be coin flips, yet they haven't been.
Yeah, no, and I look, it's the Bailey Ober factor. In those two starts, Kansas City has outscored the Twins 17-1 this season. So what's that make it, 34-18 in the other six games? Bailey Ober has never been able to figure out the Royals. It's very weird because if you look what he's done since opening day, I think he has a 3.10 ERA. In that start, he lasted 2 outs, gave up 8 runs. We'd be talking about Bailey Ober as a Cy Young candidate if it wasn't for that opening day start right now. He's been that good, and he's been excellent the last 9 times out there. His 9 quality starts in a row, 6 innings, It's the longest streak for a Twins pitcher in a long time. For whatever reason, he can't figure out the Royals, and it's why we won't see him in this series. You know, he could potentially go on Wednesday. I'm getting the sense the Twins, they haven't announced it, but I'm getting the sense the Twins are going to give him an extra day of rest and start him Thursday in Texas, because they're in this stretch right now where they have 13 games in a row and they're trying to keep their starting pitchers fresh, especially since out of the original group, only Pablo Lopez and Bailey Ober are healthy. So they're trying to take care of their guys. And I think one way to maybe take care of Bailey Ober is not start him against a team that's just given him fits for his entire career.
Right now, we're talking to Dan Hayes, who covers the Twins for The Athletic. Dan, I know that this question has been posed to the Royals in Kansas City. I'm curious if this same thing has happened in Minnesota. I mentioned the records earlier. I mean, Minnesota is 12-1 against the White Sox, and they've just been okay against everybody else. The comparison that a lot of people have made here in Kansas City is to the Miami Dolphins from this year in the NFL. They beat up on some of the lower-tier teams in the league, but when they went up against Kansas City and Baltimore, they usually lost those games. What's the feeling around this Twins team as the season is playing out?
I think that, you know, a lot, if you look early on, a lot of it was when the Twins haven't been at full strength. Now, one of the things that the Twins kind of maybe are finding out is the reality is they're just not going to be at full strength. You know, Byron Buxton left Monday's game with hip soreness and is day-to-day, and we'll see how long he's out. Carlos Correa hasn't played since July 10th. Before that, you know, Royce Lewis missed the first 58 games of the season. It's sort of just been their reality. But a lot of the damage against really good teams was early on. They had this stretch where they came out and they played Cleveland, they played the Dodgers, they played the Brewers, they played Baltimore, they played the Yankees, all with Royce Lewis on the bench. I think that the Twins feel like that they are better than they've shown against those teams. That record has improved a lot. And, yeah, they're great against the White Sox and just two games above 500 against everybody else. But I think, you know, they've shown a lot of flashes. They had a homestand against Boston and Seattle back in May when they were kind of at half strength and they took 5 out of 7 from them. You know, I think that you look at Kansas City, Kansas City is a good team. The fact that the Twins have beat them 6 out of 8 says a lot. You know, it's just been a strange year all around for the Twins. They cannot seem to stay healthy. And then they lost Joe Ryan last week and potentially for the rest of the season. So maybe it is the reality that they just won't be healthy at 100% at any time, and this is who they are. But I think they feel like they are a better team and that they will achieve better health. And that's why they're kind of looking long-term with some of these guys. Carlos Correa is not rushing back. Byron Buxton might sit 3 or 4 days with this injury to make sure that he can be around for the rest of the season. So they've been very cautious, and I think that that has hurt them at times. And, you know, I mean, it still doesn't explain Cleveland, but, you know, they did go 2-2 with Royce Lewis in the lineup against Cleveland, whereas they were 0-5 earlier in the season when he was out of the lineup. So I think they feel they're better, but they got to prove it.
Absolutely. Dan, are you still looking to the division, or have you kind of shifted towards the wild card? It's funny because we were having this conversation with our Royals insider, and his point was everybody is so focused on the wild card when the division is still there. Well, if you can't beat the team that's in second place right ahead of you of Minnesota, then it's just not realistic to think that you can win the division. You guys are in a little bit of a different spot. You guys have struggled against Cleveland. Are Twins fans focused on trying to catch Cleveland in the division or hold on to one of those wild card spots?
You know, when you talk to the team, they basically say, we just got to take care of our own business. Cleveland's been outstanding this year. Whether or not that bullpen can hold up another 48 games or whatever's left in their schedule, it remains to be seen. They are asking a lot of their relievers. They really didn't do much at the deadline to improve their starting staff. I do like the two kids that they have in there. You know, we saw them, Gavin Williams looked pretty good against the Twins. Because he was locating his secondary stuff. And obviously Bibby is looking very good and like the real deal. I'm like, hey, what do you know? Cleveland found another great pitcher to put at the front of its rotation. But beyond them, I mean, look, Alex Cobb looked terrible against the Twins. Carrasco just went on the IL. They're working on a limited rotation right now. And you wonder if that can hold up. And yet, at the same time, as much as you wonder if it can hold up, they keep doing it, and they've done it all year. It's hard to say, does Cleveland slow down? They have the schedule in their favor. The only meetings left with the Twins, all four in Cleveland in September. You know, Correa should be back for that and could be a huge difference maker, I think, in that regard. But at the same time, I think the Twins just need to focus on playing well and stay, you know, in the third, fourth, make sure that they are in that wild card spot, because I think, you know, you look at what they were able to accomplish last year. They kind of got over that hump where they now know that they're capable of doing something in the playoffs. And I think that this is an experienced group that likes each other, and it's a very deep and talented group. You know, you consider that Twins team that scored 8 runs last night is missing, you know, Carlos Correa out of the lineup last night. Brooks Lee is not in the lineup right now. He's on the IL. You know, they have 6, 7, 8 guys deep that is, they're good, formidable bats. And I think that team showed what it's capable of last night. They can hit with anybody. And if they can do that, you know, they have a chance to make some noise in October.
Last thing here, Dan, and you alluded to it. It's funny because these three teams are pretty close between Cleveland, Minnesota, and Kansas City. Obviously, Cleveland has the advantage, 3.5 games up on Minnesota and 5 games up on Kansas City. But, I mean, the last 40 games of this season is really going to be a sprint to see who gets the best of each other as these teams still play each other. Minnesota still comes to Kansas City. Kansas City still has 7 games against the Guardians. That even though the Royals, they are furthest away back, they maybe have the best ability to make up that ground if they can simply take care of their own business. And you said that regarding the Twins as well.
Yeah, and I think the Twins are hoping the Royals play Cleveland great. I mean, the Royals have really good starting pitching, and that's been evident all year. The one thing the Royals have a little disadvantage on is I think they only have 26 home games left, and you guys know the disparity between how good they are at home and how good they are offensively on the road. I mean, it's huge, and look at Bobby Witt. It's like 400 points of OPS difference. Bobby Witt is the greatest player on the face of the earth when he's in Kansas City, which is so hard to explain because I just don't think of that as a place that you should hit. And he has found a way to master it, and it's amazing. He's such a talent, and he's like, look, he should be very strong consideration for the MVP candidate, but they have more road games than they do home. And seriously, that, you know, you think that favors the other teams, but at the same time, you just can't bet against their starting pitching. I know Singer didn't have a good start last night, but man, he looks really good compared to where he was a couple of years ago. And Lugo's been outstanding. Like, it's just a solid rotation through and through, and you have enough guys getting it done with the lineup. So it should be a really interesting final, you know, 50, 48 games, whatever we have here. With three teams that are playing way better than anyone ever gave them credit for or expected. Everybody thought the Twins were going to be good. Everybody else thought that the Royals and Cleveland would scrape by and maybe get to 500. It's nice to see the division surpassing expectations.
Dan, I will get you out of here with this. I promise this is the last question. Right now, the White Sox have 29 wins. How many wins do you think they finish with?
Man, put me on the spot. I'm going to go 40. They're going to go 40 and 122. They're terrible.
They're worst.
I used to cover them for 6 years, and they were bad when I covered them. They are much worse now. They traded everybody. There's some nice young talent coming up, and maybe that'll get them – back on the road, but man, that's gonna be a long road for them for right now.
We have Denny Matthews come on the show, the Hall of Fame voice of the Royals, and he told me a month ago, he said the White Sox are the worst team I've ever seen. And for Denny Matthews to say that, who he called the first pitch of the first Royals game, for him to say that, he has seen a lot of bad baseball. That caught my attention. They stink.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do, and they were built to stink, but I think they're even worse than the teams thought they'd be. So you know, what a year. And the crazy part is because of the rules in place, they can't draft higher than 10th anyways, because they drafted in the top 5 this year. So they're going to end up potentially with one of the worst records of all time, and they're going to draft 10th or 11th next year. It's insane.
That is Dan Hayes joining us on the show today. He covers the Twins for The Athletic. Dan, great stuff. We got to do this again whenever Minnesota comes back to Kansas City.
All right. Sounds good, man.
That was Dan Hayes joining us on the show today. He covers the Minnesota Twins. Great stuff from him. Really appreciate the insight. Coming up on the other side, let's talk about the Kansas City Royals. I have come to a few conclusions, at least with the Royals. I want to share them with you. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful Tuesday. Let's get back to talking about the Kansas City Royals. Rob, I feel like we are going to talk about this almost every single day that this continues to be the case. I know what the Royals record says that it is. I know what it says. You know what the Royals are? The Royals are 53-53. They're going to say, well, Carrington, what are you talking about? The record says that they're 65-54. They're 53-53 against every other team in Major League Baseball other than the Chicago White Sox. Now, I am not saying that to disparage the Kansas City Royals. That is a team in your division. You are feasting on that team. You got to do what you got to do. So I'm not saying that in any way to disparage the Royals. But I do think we have seen enough Royals baseball to know this team, they have not shown me the ability to get hot outside of the White Sox. Every streak that they have gone on this season has been supported by the fact of them beating the White Sox. I was talking to Rob about this earlier. Rob, what was the stat you told me? That through the first, 20 games or so, they had the most wins of any team in the second half of the season.
Going into last night, they were 13-8, which was tied for the best record in the AL after the All-Star break.
Okay. And that is a great stat. 13-8. 13-8 is 13-8. I'm not here to put down 13-8. Six of those games were against the White Sox.
To be fair, White Sox games count. They're on the schedule.
100%. My larger point about this is going to be a serious fight. I don't think the Royals have a 13-8 stretch left in them. They have not shown me that at any point this season. We have seen 106 Royals games. Aside from them playing the White Sox, they're a 500 baseball team. Do they have the ability to get hot in this thing? Because we talked yesterday about the Vern cut, and Vern was saying everybody is so focused on the wild card. No, they can win the division. In order to win the division, that means you got to start winning series against these teams. You got to beat Minnesota in a 3-game set. You got to beat the Cubs in a 3-game set. You got to beat Boston in a 3-game set. Rob, it's been almost 2 months since they've beat a good team in a series. It's been almost 2 months. The last team that they beat that you and I jointly agree, oh, that team's good. It was almost 2 months ago that has happened. Now, I'm not saying all of this, like the Royals can't make the postseason this way. Can they continue to tread water to this point? But what I would say, the best thing that could happen to the Royals is you need also one of these other teams not to get hot. Do you think it's possible that Houston can get hot down the stretch? Is it possible that Seattle could get hot down the stretch? Could Boston get hot down the stretch? Because at I don't know if the Royals have a 14-8 stretch in them down the way. If they have a 14-8 stretch down, then they're making the way. There ain't nothing to worry about. They're making the playoffs. If they got a 15-9 stretch in them down the way, that means you win the series against the Guardians. That means you win the series against the Phillies. That means you are doing what you're supposed to do, and you've put yourself in a position to make the postseason. They have been on this seesaw, this teeter-totter, this back and forth. They've been doing this for 2 months. That, hey, if the postseason started today, they got a two-game lead on Boston. They got a two-game lead on Seattle. We have been saying this whole time. It is, I would say at this point, I feel pretty confident that Minnesota is going to make the playoffs. A big reason is why is Minnesota just keeps beating the Royals. You can't talk to me about the division if you can't pass the team that's in second place. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to win your division to make the postseason. That's the beauty of the wild card. That's why the wild card exists. What you're talking about, let's say that you have Minnesota making the postseason. Rob, I imagine that you do. Minnesota's going to make the postseason. I think you and I would also agree that the loser of the AL East is going to make the postseason. So whether that's the Yankees, whether that's the Orioles, I don't care. You pick. So if the Yankees are making it and the Twins are making it, what you're talking about is three teams fighting for one spot. I guess technically you can say four because Houston would be in there, but either Houston or Seattle, one of those teams is going to win the American League West. It's three teams fighting for one spot. Now, I don't want to make it seem all doom and gloom. You can still win this series against the Minnesota Twins. But at some point, we can't keep talking about these games as ideas and, hey, you got to... It is less than 50 games left in the season. You got to start figuring out a way to put a string together or start winning the series against the teams that you need to win them against.
I'll say this. I don't disagree with your premise. They need to string wins together. But if you're saying it's three teams fighting for one spot, they currently hold the spot. That is a fact. They are in the third wild card spot. Me and you can disagree on if the battle for the division is still raging on, but they do right now hold the third wild card spot. Do you know what makes it very difficult on the teams chasing that wild card spot to do? Take over that spot is if you maintain. That tread water you're talking about, if you can do that, you can hold the spot. And if you're having winning weeks, if you're going 4-3 every week, if you're going 4-2, 3-3 every week, 100%. You can hold that playoff spot. 100%. And the good news for the Royals is, you're right, they haven't beaten the best of the best in AL. We know from earlier in the year they struggled with Baltimore. They have struggled with the Yankees. Like, those teams do get the best of them. They've played well against the Guardians, but they've struggled against the Twins. But you know what happens after this Twin series? Looking at just this week in a vacuum, their six games, they have the Reds on the back end. The Reds are a sub-500 team. So maybe you lose series to the Twins, and everyone's doom and gloom on Thursday. Oh, they can't beat good teams. You win the series over the weekend against the Reds. You had a 3-3 week, which means a team chasing you like the Red Sox or the Mariners had to go, 5-1 to gain the two and a half games you have on them? You do that again next week. You have the Angels. They really stink. They're the AL West version of the White Sox. But that's unfair. No one's that bad as the White Sox. They're just a bad baseball team. You take 2 or 3 from then. Now you're 2-1 going into a weekend series. You just to hold a playoff spot can maintain. I think to do what you're talking about and get hot and start beating good teams, that is the path to win the division, which I still believe exists. But if the path is, hey, we're just going to maintain, beat up on the bad teams, survive and advance against the good ones, you are probably going to hold on to that third wild card spot, and we're going to be talking about playoff baseball in Kansas City. It might be early exit baseball, but it's playoff baseball.
I don't disagree with you. I guess what I would counter with is there are no more – very few bad teams left, and at some point, you start playing the teams that are around you. Houston is around you. You really need to split that series. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, I get where you're coming from, but they took 3 of 4 from Cleveland at the end of June. I just would like to point out, if we are saying that they did this at the end of June, that was before the 4th of July, they have played 10 series since then, and they're currently in their 11th series since the Cleveland series. But I'm not here to poke holes in the Royals. I'm really not. I made this announcement. I'm not sure if you were here or not. I am looking at this thing like the Electoral College. You remember when on election night, they're going to have the board up there, and somebody's going to be pointing to all these different states and pointing to colors and showing you what you need to do in order to make sure that you can wrap up the presidency? I'm trying to do that right now with you and how the Royals can make the postseason. You want to know the number one way the Royals can make the postseason? Beat Cleveland and Minnesota. That's the number one way that you can do it. Sure, those other games against Philadelphia are great to win. The number one way that they can make the postseason is to beat Minnesota and Cleveland. You don't need help from anybody else if you do that. So far this season, they have played Minnesota 8 times. They have lost 6 of those games. So it is not realistic to talk about winning the division if you can't beat the second place team. If you can't pass the second place team, you never find yourself in a position to overtake the first place team. That's step one of this conversation. So again, I'm not here to tell you the Royals can't make the postseason. I still believe in this team. But days like yesterday in which this team is built on starting pitching is going to win us. You just didn't get good enough starting pitching today. These next 2 days, you have your 2 best pitchers again. You had the same situation last week. Same 3 pitchers. You had Reagans, Singer, and Lugo go. You lost the series at home to the Boston Red Sox. You got to figure out a way to win this series against the Minnesota Twins. If you win this series, you were in second place in the division, and you probably end this series, what, 3.5 games out? 4 games out of first place, and you still got games come. You got 7 games left against the Cleveland Guardians. So I'm just simply here trying to give you guys the pathway. How do the Royals make the postseason? It's clear. There's an obvious path. The Royals this season, between games with Minnesota and Cleveland, they have 2 more games against Minnesota in this series. They have 3 more games. So they have 12 games remaining against the 2 teams that are ahead of them in their division. If they can figure out a way to go 8-4 in that stretch, the Royals got a realistic chance of winning this division. If you continue to just do what you've been doing, play 500, you go 6-6, you go 5-7, let's eliminate the division conversation. It is solely a wild card conversation that we are then having about the Royals. We can take you guys' phone calls on this. 913-586-7610. Let's talk some baseball. The Royals lose game 1 to the Minnesota Twins. They got game 2 tonight. They got Seth Lugo on the mound. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I want to read a couple of texts here. Someone said, CDOT, the point is that the Royals need to play better on the road. Out of the 53-53 that they have, what's the home and road record? Well, I didn't take away the White Sox games on the road. Maybe that's my fault. The Royals' road record so far this season is 27-29. They haven't played that poorly on the road. The Royals are, we've seen, aside from the White Sox game, they've been around a 500 team. Now, obviously, they played the White Sox on the road, but they've also played the White Sox at home, and they've won all of those games, too. So the Royals' road record, to me, isn't really going to be the thing that keeps them out. They have been hovering around 500. This isn't a series, Rob, I would say. I don't expect them to get swept in this series against the Twins. They've done a good job of sort of eliminating those sweeps over the course of the season. The question is, are they going to win the series or not? You got a chance to win them against the next 2 pitchers. Someone on the text line says, CDOT, how can you discredit them beating Cleveland because it was in June, but you're going to use the entire year's record against the White Sox? Seems silly. I'm not here discrediting that the Royals beat the Guardians. No, that's great. I'm pointing out the fact that we are talking about something that happened at the end of June, and it is the middle of August. And if we are looking at how many games they have left, the Royals have 43 games remaining. Let's say the Royals do in these games what they've basically done in all their other games. They play around 500. Rob, if they finish around 500, that would give them a record of 22-21 the rest of the way, right? That's 43 games. That would have them finishing with 87 wins. You agree, 87 is right there on the fringe of if you're going to make the postseason or not. It's right there. You got a chance to, but the Yankees are going to win more than 87 games, I would guess. Also going to guess that Minnesota wins more than 87 games, but they're going to be right there. And you're in a conversation again with Boston and Seattle and a race. That's why when we first start, I think you were here when we did this. 90, you 100% get in. If the Royals win 90 games, they are making the postseason. Anything less than them winning 90, you open yourself up to you getting caught by one of these other teams. You're not going to have 4 teams in the American League that don't win their division win 90 games. It ain't that deep. one of these teams fall off. Seattle has an injury. Boston falls off. One of these teams could be Kansas City. One of these teams falls off. If the Royals win 87 games, they are vulnerable to miss the postseason.
I would agree. I have always, since we pulled the numbers, kept 90 as the number. 90 is the path, which, what, that's 25 wins the next 51 games? You got to play 500 ball down the stretch and you become a 90-win team? When you phrase it like that, it doesn't seem insurmountable. It seems rather doable. You laid out the stat earlier, and I'm not even trying to discredit the White Sox or Royals here either. You laid out the stat. They are basically a 500 baseball team. They're 53-53 when they're not playing the absolute worst team I've ever seen fielded. They're 53-53. Be that baseball team from here to the end of September. Yeah, they're going to be serious against, I know the Braves are on the schedule at the end of the year. You probably aren't going to Atlanta and beating the Braves. But you know what? The Angels are also on the schedule. You got games against other bad teams. You got games against the Nationals on the schedule. You just got to be exactly what you are down the stretch, and you get to that 90 number. And maybe the number bumps up because the Mariners and Twins both get red hot, and the Red Sox, and the race now becomes 93. If that's the case, I don't think anyone's going to look back at the Royals season and say, man, they went 90-72 and missed the postseason. What a failure. 90's the number, and between now and the end of the season, that's 25 and 26 baseball. Not even 500. It's a little bit under 500. Just the epitome of treading water gets you to the postseason. So that's why people like me and Vern are looking at this thing a little different than you. I'm thinking to myself, if you can be a sub 500 team, or just barely sub 500 between here and October, you're probably locking in a wild card postseason spot. So let's have a little ambition. Let's view a little higher. Let's aim a little bigger. Let's try to be a 27-24, a 28-23. Let's be what you have been since the All-Star break, where you're 13-9. Let's double that up. You become a 26-18 team since the break. You could do that again. You can be in that sphere. And now you are potentially chasing down the Guardians, especially since they've played well against that Cleveland team. And I think there's still 7 games on the schedule against the Guardians. So I guess maybe where it's just a difference of opinion, a semantics, point of view, whatever, I kind of, because they have to get the 90 wins and they have 51 left, view that as that's the one in the hand. Let's go for the one in the bush, which is the AL Central.
They have 43 games left. Just want to at least clarify.
I thought you said 51.
Fewer games than that. I just want to at least be clear.
I apologize. Yep.
The Royals have 43 games left remaining in the season. Like it's kind of a sense of urgency, and I think the reason we're having this conversation is they are playing one of the teams that you can directly pass. Last week, at the beginning of the week, you were gone. I know that. You were celebrating your honeymoon. They were playing the Red Sox. The Red Sox made up ground against the Kansas City Royals. Now, they gave it back over the weekend when they got swept, but in that series, the White Sox were able to catch up to Kansas City because of those games. If the Royals win this series against the Minnesota Twins, they will be in second place in the division. They will be in second place. You don't need anybody else's help. For right now, the wild card does not matter. I'm not looking at the wild card this week. If you win the next 2 days, you are in second place in the American League Central. Then I'm willing to have that conversation about the division. You ain't winning the division from third. You're winning the division from second place. That starts with you doing what you need to do in this series against the Minnesota Twins, and you've got the two best pitchers on your team going up today. You hope that Seth Lugo bounces back from his last start. You also got Cole Reagans. Your two all-stars are pitching these next couple of days in Minneapolis against the Twins. Earlier today, J.J. Piccolo was on Cody and Gold. He was asked a question about if he wants Major League Baseball players to compete in the next Olympics. Here's what he said.
That's something I think our commissioner and the powers that be have to decide if that's something we're going to do. I know with our schedule, the NHL does it, and they're probably somewhat maybe the most similar schedule, you know, in other of the other sports. But it creates a major void in the middle of the season to not play for 2 weeks, and it's however many games, 12 games, could be 14 games. And I don't know how we do that, because now you're pushing the season, you know, regular season back into October. Now you're getting into cold weather. And it may lead to something that, you know, I don't think any of our fans would want. It may lead to a neutral site World Series, you know. And I think that's what makes our game really cool compared to the Super Bowl. You know, you want your fans to witness a World Series game, not have to travel thousands of miles and spend thousands of dollars to do it. So there could be a side effect that may not set well with the fan base. So, but as I said, that's just my opinion on it. I don't know where it's going to go. I think it'd be fun to see our players compete against, you know, all the best players in other countries, but I don't know if it's worth doing it at the expense of the regular season.
Baseball is so frustrating. They really are. Did you guys see the ratings for the Olympic basketball game? It peaked at 23 million people watched the United States play baseball. Women's basketball got 10 million people, and it was on a Sunday. It was during church. They got 10 million people to watch it. Baseball, don't be short-sighted here. This seems like a very simple fix. You told me this stat earlier, Rob, when we were talking about it. The NHL does this for the Winter Olympics. You guys want to know how long the NHL takes out for the Winter Olympics? 12 days. 12 days they take out. They still do their regular 82. They still do the Stanley Cup. They take a 12-day break for the Olympics because it matters to their players. It matters to the growth of the game. Hockey is very important to the Winter Olympics. They see the bigger picture and the bigger vision. Baseball, this just seems really simple. Schedule some doubleheaders over the course of the year to make up for the days that you can't be there. You can't get your players to see the value in agreeing to that. You can't get your owners to agree to the value of that. Of instead of playing this tournament in March, when the basketball tournament is going on, we can't do a baseball tournament over the course of the summer in which millions of people will watch it and will do better than literally anything else that we can create over the course of the season. I don't understand why baseball wouldn't love this idea. It would work for everybody. We would talk about baseball in the summer. We would be excited about baseball in the summer. You would want to... This would be great. I don't understand. I don't really get the negatives of Major League Baseball taking a break in 4 years for 2 weeks so they can have their best players play in this.
Doesn't make any sense to me. And also, listen, I know the answer is just because baseball. Why are we holding 162 in such reverence? Why not every 4 years? Hey, we're playing 148 this year. And then have a note in the history books. They played 148 because of the Olympics. Are we going to look back at the 2028 Royals and they went, you know, 85 and 63 or whatever it is and say, oh, that's not a 162 season? No, we would say they had a good season and Bobby Witt was the starting shortstop for the Olympics. Like, part of the hangup here is not just the 2 weeks of games missed. It's the fact that baseball and the powers that be look at 162 games like that is the perfect number, no changes, no notes, chef's kiss. Every 4 years, just drop it down to 148. They used to play, what, 150 back in the way back when? Drop it to 150. You don't need 162 on an Olympic year. Then it also takes the stress off the players' bodies. They can play in the Olympics and push themselves. Like, there are ways to get around this beyond just, we got to start the season earlier and doubleheaders and, hey, it would cause a neutral site. There are ways to do this, and they don't do it.
It just, I just don't understand. Someone on the text line says, terrible idea. Go play in Venezuela. I mean, the Olympics are in Los Angeles. I don't know why they would have to go play in Venezuela. Baseball is a very international game. I mean, we watch baseball. There's American players. There's Cuban players. There's players from all across the globe. There's one event that we all watch that celebrate athletes from across the globe. Baseball is not a part of it. It also happens. It just, all of it makes sense. Like, literally all of it makes sense. I don't understand the logic other than, well, this is what we always do. Well, do something different.
Also, we can just go ahead. If we're going to put them in the Olympics, let's go ahead and just no more World Baseball Classic.
No, yeah, get rid of that.
This is the
World Baseball Classic.
Exactly. The World Baseball Classic is held on MLB Network, which Textline always tells me, hey, premium channels are the worst to put sports on. It's on the MLB Network. So put it on NBC, put it on the NBC Family Networks. I think USA Basketball is on USA a few times. Do that, and you get better ratings, and your biggest stars, both domestically and abroad, are highlighted a better level than when they're playing on the MLB Network. Like, did anyone, when Salvador Perez in the World Baseball Classic playing for Venezuela, watch when they were on some random channel taking on the Dominican Republic? Probably not. But you know what I would do? If it was on right now in the office, I'd watch.
Yeah, text line 913-586-7610. CDOT, I can't see the owners agreeing to anything that would negatively impact their revenue. If you can't sell to John Sherman the benefit of letting Bobby Witt Jr. play in a baseball game that 10 million people are going to watch, then I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know what we're doing here. It just seems like that would be a positive for everybody. Seems like it would be really good for 26 million people watch the gold medal basketball game. You know the last time that the NBA got 26 million people to watch an NBA game? That many people watching Steph Curry is not a negative. That many people watching LeBron or Anthony Edwards is not a negative for your sport. Now, I understand it doesn't happen, but trust me, if the Winter Olympics had basketball instead of the Summer Olympics, the NBA would take a break because the NBA understands the importance of the international mission. I don't see how baseball doesn't see the exact same thing. Look at a baseball team. Look at a baseball roster. It is players from, there's probably more countries represented in baseball than there are in the NBA. It's more of an international game than any sport we have here in America other than soccer. I don't know how they don't see there is a flagship international event. We should be a part of it. I want to play one more cut from you guys from JJ Piccolo. He was asked about how the Royals are using the bullpen. Here's what the GM said.
You look back to when we were in Detroit, he came in the sixth inning, you know, and I'm watching the game thinking, all right, why are we bringing him here? But when you reflect on that moment in the game, that was a momentum swinger. If we don't close that inning out there, we may be behind and you don't even get to Urseg in the eighth, and Harvey wasn't on the IL at that point. You don't get to them in the eighth and ninth because you're behind. So you're pitching differently. So, you know, having both Urseg and Harvey, two new additions, you know, allows Q to feel confident in going to Urseg. And a lot of it just depends on the matchups. I mean, the times that he's come in the non-ninth inning situations, which was really just every outing except for the last one where he finished the eighth and then went to the ninth, he faced the heart of the order. You know, so he was facing what should be the most difficult part of the order. If he goes 1-2-3 in those innings, now whoever comes in is facing either 4-5-6 or, you know, 5-6-7, and you can get to the ninth without really turning that lineup over. So, you know, I commend Q for the way he's using them. I think we've won some games because of the way he's used them. And once we get Harvey back, we'll feel a lot better about the depth of our bullpen. And
Rob, I think this is one of those things that, admittedly, I would say I'm probably more of an old school baseball thinker in this way. This just sounds like one of those topics that the stat people in baseball, they just have a different look at it the way that you and I maybe are accustomed to growing up to. Because when I saw Lucas Urseg come into the game Friday in the seventh inning, it felt very off to me. Now, one of my good friends, big baseball fan, we kind of talked through the logic and he was like, this is why it works. And we had a good conversation about it. I think what we are just seeing is, I would say, very similar to the NFL with analytics and going forward on fourth down and how our generation is much more prone to be aggressive and go forward on fourth and short, not kick field goals, and maybe play more of the analytics. I think that's what the analytics in baseball tell you, that the high leverage situation that historically has usually been the eighth and ninth inning, that's when you put your closer in. That's when you put your best relief pitcher. I think the Royals were telling you that they subscribe to a very different thought process, that sometimes they see the high leverage situation at the end of the sixth inning or the seventh inning. Now, there's still a lot of game left. I would just disagree with them, but that's at least what it sounds like to me. If I have the wrong understanding, please tell me. I'm sure that I'm maybe missing something, at least when it comes to this conversation, but that's what it sounds like to me. Our new school analytics tell us that the way we have been doing it in Raw is wrong, and this is how we choose to do it.
And I'm probably more of a new school thinker here because I fall more in line with JJ and how Quatrero has handled the bullpen. The most important three outs aren't necessarily the final three. You still got to get the final three outs. Don't get me wrong, but like if it's a 3-2 game and it's going into the, you know, and you got a runner on first, runner on third with one out in the eighth, you're not waiting to be like, hey, let's see if we can get through this to save Urseg for the ninth. I'm bringing Urseg in right there. I'm getting the two outs right there, and we're going to the ninth of the lead. So You're a little more old school on it. I'm a little more new school on it. I think probably the correct answer, for lack of better terms, in the middle. But I don't mind the Royals saying, hey, the most important three outs aren't necessarily the final three. If 2, 3, and 4 do up in the eighth, we're taking our best pitcher then, not in the ninth inning just because it's the ninth inning. If 7, 8, 9 are due up in the ninth, don't waste Urseg. Make sure he's used best, because the goal is to win, not to make sure you have your best pitcher saved for the final three outs.
I would like to tell you this really quickly before we have to take a break here. Did you know that if you live in Missouri in November, you will be able to bet on if you want sports gambling or not? For those of you that like to wager on these games, you know the feeling that I'm talking about, that you really want to place a bet. You got to call somebody that lives in Kansas, or you got to hop in the vehicle and you got to get just enough over to state line so you can be able to place that wager. Well, you know what? In November, you will have the opportunity to go to your local voting booth and you will be able to vote on sports betting. That's also going to be a pretty big election. There's a lot of other important things that are going to be on the ballot in November. So, you know what? Makes a lot of sense to me why they want to do this. So, November. If you want FanDuel to be legal on the Missouri side, which, you know, I would actually like that to be the case, too. It's, Rob, that'd be great for our show if FanDuel was legal in Missouri. If you want DraftKings to be available, if you want Prize Picks and all these other ones, I would encourage you to go vote in November. You can vote on if you want sports gambling or not in Missouri. I'm going to guess that it's going to pass. I just would be very, very surprised. I don't really understand the logic of why it wouldn't pass. They have it in Kansas. Why would we not have it in Missouri? Just seems like it would pass to me, but people are arguing that they shouldn't have baseball in the Olympics. So I don't know. Who knows what's right and what's wrong? Coming up on the other side, let's get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Keep it right here. So drive.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.